going to be a long night in front of this screen.
Please join us for meetings.
Mayor, did you get on? I see a link for you. I don't see your face.
No, I'm set. I'm all good.
Excellent.
I wanted to ask if everyone has received, Vern, your email that you sent out. I want to make sure everybody can look and follow along with that. So, Council, has everybody received and printed the material that Vern has sent us?
Which email?
It was email that came out, I think, Vern, by 1:30?
We'll do the tax budget one after when we get to that agenda item, but I believe the first item is the appropriations amendment.
Right. Right, and that, what time did that go out, Vern?
1:30 or so.
That's what I thought. I want to make sure everybody has that so we can follow along. Vern, I'm going to have you lead us everything. Then this way we can look at writing what you've done for us and everything. And again, this is if council feels they need another, we're going to have a whole week before next Tuesday's meeting. So if we need to have another meeting, we can maybe we'll decide that before we leave. Or if you have questions, you can certainly contact Vern or myself, and we can go over those questions and everything too. So just appreciate it. I guess you're very thorough on all the materials we read, and it'll be up to us after this to if we have any questions to get back to you or to dig deeper into all these. But the main thing is we review this now.
Hey, Dave, is that the one that's got County of Cuyahoga across the front of it?
That's the tax budget.
That's the tax budget. Open the other one up there, Chris.
Yeah, the tax budget will be the second item on our agenda. We'll discuss that probably the last half hour, maybe from 6 to 6:30 or so.
Hey, Dave, you want to open up the meeting first?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Okay, I just want to make sure that everybody has that so they're not scrambling once the meeting starts.
Yeah, I can't find it. I'm not pulling it up.
I think if Vernon would have sent it out earlier, we could have been up and prepared.
No. I know. He's so not on the ball.
Very good. Well, Debbie, if we may, I think everyone is here on the committee, so I will open the May 5th, 4:30 p.m. Finance Committee meeting. Debbie, will you call the roll, please?
Grindel?
This one.
Here.
Sinek?
Here.
Vavrka?
Councilor Welch-Ambush, I just sent it to you again directly, just to you.
Very good. And as we approve our minutes at the regional council meeting, we'll go right into agenda item one, amendment to the annual appropriation ordinance. And again, that will be introduced and I believe voted upon at the May meeting. And Vern, I will leave the floor to you to lead us here in this discussion. And we'll go from there.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Council and Committee. This is the first request of an amendment to the Appropriations Ordinance for 2020. It's basically due to a couple of change orders that were approved at the April meeting and the payment to J.D. Williamson. It's outside of that, it's really not out of the ordinary. We'll go through it. If you're looking for, we could certainly have discussion on the topic, but if you're looking for a discussion on budget cuts as far as operating and so forth, a budget amendment does not include any of that to any material extent because those decisions have not been solidified by the mayor. So right now, the May budget amendment that we're proposing is just reflecting a few things that we'll review, and mostly the ordinances that were passed, additional spending ordinances that were passed at the April council meeting.
And Vern, if I may, sure. We do have a a council meeting set aside, I think, for the 19th. Is that correct, Debbie? The
strategic
planning part two. I believe we're talking about having it on the 19th at 4:30. And I believe by that time, it's 2 more weeks away from now, maybe we'll have a better idea on how the state's program of getting us back into getting the economy back running, and we might have a better idea on further budget moves at that point based on how our, I think, Vern, you'll know a little more too from Rita as far as collections go and that. So that'll be a discussion that we'll continue on. We might have to have more frequently once the 19th and as time goes by, because this thing changes from day to day, week to week. So we it's probably good that we do keep on top of things. I'm sorry, Vern, for...
No, perfectly fine and 100% accurate, Chairman. We should have the remainder of the Rita collections that we will receive in May that are basically March's collections by the end of the week prior to the 19th, by the 15th. So hopefully we can report to council on the 19th what those final numbers are reflecting. Just a quick gloss over and in review, when council adopts an appropriation amendment, what you're doing is authorizing a maximum amount of money that can be spent. And so an appropriation ordinance is strictly a spending ordinance. In an appropriation ordinance does not have a single revenue line in it. It is strictly how the money is going to go out. But I feel that before we could just jump into answering that question, what does this appropriation amendment entail of how the money is going to go out? What goes out the door here at the city is really predicated on what comes in the door, what revenue we have coming in. And so if you have the one attachment, it's one of only two that I attach from the multi-page cash flow statement that I provide for council on a periodic basis. It's page number 4, the revenue page. And I'll give you a few seconds to find that in the attachment. It should have some different colors on there, some orange, brownish, rust color in one column. That was projected 2020 budget revenue, and then some yellow columns where we're going to propose to amend that. And while you're looking for that and finding that, I'll continue to talk and clarify it more, that this page, this revenue page, I present it again because I think it's very important that council knows where the money's coming from before it can allocate how it's going to go out the door. But there is no mechanism really in the appropriation ordinance to approve revenue estimates. It's strictly an estimate by this department that I'm more than willing to take suggestions, input, ideas, alternative revenue estimates, but this is the best estimates that we have, and then these estimates will help down the road as far as allocating revenue, because our revenue is our primary resource for spending. But again, revenue is not appropriated. So any disagreements, any ideas, talk to me, bring them up, let's discuss them. But there's really nothing to really vote on as far as estimated revenue, because it's just our estimate, and hopefully that's clear. If you have that sheet pulled up, you'll see that in the rust-colored column that the net City of Independence revenue that we had projected for 2020 was rounded off to $44 million even. That's after subtracting out the HIDA money and the strike force money that runs through our books. After some of the changes that we'll talk about in that second last column, which is the yellow highlighted column, we're estimating now a total decrease of $5.375 million, and it's broken down as noted in that far right-hand column.
The big one is obviously the income tax. The 3.4 million that we're projecting income tax to be down is 10% of the 34 million that we anticipated coming in this year. You've known from my communications, I personally have hesitated to be pinned down to an exact figure of how much is revenue going to be down because of this pandemic. It's a loaded question because I've stated in the past, I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't know of the thousands of employers and independents, how many of them stayed in business, how many of them temporary closed up shop, how many kept employees on the payroll, how many didn't, how many laid off. We're going to find that out over the next couple of months, but we have to start somewhere for the discussion. RITA itself estimated revenue losses for all of the hundreds, if not thousands, of public entities across the state that it collects and processes income tax collections for. And for us, their estimate was just about $3 million. It was $2,999, something rounded to $3 million even. So I took that as a starting point and said, look, that's just under 10%. I'm going to bump that up to 10% of what we originally thought, and hopefully we're conservative on that number. Nobody knows. We've heard estimates anywhere from 20%, 30% or more. It's an unknown, but we have to start somewhere. So the appropriations we're presenting are based off of a 10% reduction in income tax.
You know, Vern,
go ahead.
Oh, you brought up a good point too. I know in your notes and everything is that a number of these companies that people are still working with are working at home. And I know as a tax preparer, I know if you work and live in the same city, of course, that's the best possible tax situation. So I wonder, you know, if they continue to work at home for any length of time, you know, is that tax revenue going to go to their hometown where these people live, or is it going to go to independence where their company is based at? And that's a big point that you mentioned.
Great question, and it's been brought up across the state because my understanding is that in the emergency order that Governor DeWine issued and maybe some subsequent legislation that the General Assembly adopted, it included language specifically dealing with this issue, and that language stated that as long as the governor's stay-at-home order was in effect, that even if you're working remotely from one community, your income tax will be withheld and paid to the location of where your employer actually is located. So that is in our benefit right now. But there's always the but. Once the stay-at-home order is lifted, if companies continue to employ this model and continue to let their employees work from home, work remotely, work from wherever, the Ohio Municipal League has opined that their fear is some lawsuits are going to start challenging that and saying, look, it's taxation without representation. If I live in a community, let's say in Summit County, and my business is located in, my employer is located in Independence, but I'm not in Independence physically for more than 20 days a year, why should my taxes go to Independence? They should stay in the community I reside in. If that dynamic becomes a wave, a trend, then it's something very definitely that we're going to have to keep in our sights and adjust accordingly. We've benefited tremendously over the years by being an employment base, and that has helped our municipal income tax collections. If employees are now 10% of all the employees that work in Independence are now allowed to work remotely, and that remote location is out of the Independence, and things change and they don't have to pay taxes in Independence, then sure, that's going to impact us. But right now, that is not the case. So our projected decrease only really reflects the reduced business activity, the closing of the restaurants and bars, the hotels, shrinking down to minimal staffing, and likely other businesses taking some measures to conserve their cash that'll have an adverse impact on us. So that's the big one. Going down the list, the next largest one is the hotel motel lodging tax. The money we collect for the month of April will be the true tale. That'll come start this month. We usually collect that only about a month in arrears. We started to see the drop off in March because the stay-at-home order was instituted, I believe, March, middle of March. And so that's when a lot of those businesses were forced to essentially, a lot of people stopped traveling and the hotel business shrunk significantly. So we, as on a percentage basis, even though the $600,000 is a lot smaller than the $3.4 million of income tax that we're predicting to go down, on a percentage basis of the $1.3 million we were anticipating collecting, it's a large percentage because those hotels and motels, as we understand it, are on basically minimal staffing, minimal occupancy. And even if the stay-at-home order was lifted today, I don't see personally business travel, just the light switch turning on and immediately occupancy going from 5 or 10% to 60 or 70%. I think it's going to be a gradual ramp up. So we're trying to be very conservative in what we estimate on that. Recreation and community services, obviously those two departments, the community center has been closed. No money really being taken in the door. I have seen a lot of refunds processed for a lot of bookings that were booked for the community center during the second half of March through April and now into May. And so we're actually refunding money. And so I just don't see total money that those two departments used to take in being the same through 2020, just by the fact that that building has been closed. And we don't know what the summer is going to look like if large gatherings are not allowed to get together beyond the current 10 people. I've got to think we're not going to see Little League baseball this summer. I don't know, but I'm anticipating that we won't have all those registrations. We won't. The pool, I don't think the pool is going to open on Memorial Day weekend just because we haven't gotten direction from guidance from Columbus about anything beyond May 12th with the businesses. I'm sure it'll be forthcoming this month. I believe Recreation Director Walchianowicz is preparing the pool to open on time if we're allowed, but I personally don't see it happening. So again, I think people will hold off on buying passes and daily admissions until they see that the pool is actually open. So that's another reason for recreation and community services revenue to be down. The next one is interest. You should see from my communications that interest rates fell like a lead balloon earlier this year. And for some of our investments that we had with, say, Independence Bank that were yielding 1.9%, almost 2% earlier in the year, first quarter this year, fourth quarter last year, are now down below 1%. So that interest income, it doesn't sound like much. Oh yeah, okay, it went from 1% to 2%, but on a percentage basis, that's a 50% decrease. So we have to cut back on the amount of interest income that we're going to receive. Fines, waivers, court. I do believe the Mayor's Court, Corker Courts, Angie Zidanek, and Mayor Kurtz, to their credit, have created a very progressive, technologically advanced way to hold hearings electronically instead of in person. And to their credit, I'm being told that municipal courts across the Northeast Ohio have reached out to inquire how we've done that. So kudos to the clerk of courts and the mayor for coming up with the system to deal with the lack of the ability to have in-person face-to-face contact with public and coming up with a way for it to be done electronically so well that other communities are looking to adopt that. That being said, I'm not privy to a lot of the police department nuts and bolts daily information that they share directly with the mayor, but just in general, because you know it, you see, when I run in the morning, the amount of cars on the road the last 6 weeks has been a fraction of what a normal rush hour morning typically is. And so multiply that times 7 days a week, times the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, and there's just been a lot less opportunity to write tickets. And so my guess is that ticket revenue, at least right now, has decreased, and that that category is going to decline as well. The next one down is Strike Force. You see it going up significantly by $1,300,000. That's just a timing issue. We had projected possibly having to pay some Strike Force funds in fiscal year 2020, but not receiving them until fiscal year 2021. In further conversations that Maggie has had with the Strike Force leadership team, there is a chance that that funding could be reimbursed to us by the fourth quarter of this year. So given that statement, we were comfortable adding it to projected revenue for this year. It's really just it's a pass-through. You see, it goes out, it comes in. We have to write the check first, and then we get reimbursed by a similar amount. So it's just a pass-through. It really doesn't have an effect on the city's finances, other than some of the money that we're able to recoup through, and for the Strike Force, it's through some of their drug busts and the money they got. But we're just a pass-through, so whatever's shown on revenue goes out in expenses. And really, we're not out any money on that, but the gain is relatively nominal. Two more categories that we are projecting some revenue decline. Deposit and bonds is the next one, going from $275,000 down to $150,000 estimate. That one is also fairly inconsequential, because a builder, let's say they're going to build a house and they put up some money, and some of it stays with us to cover inspection fees, but some of the other landscaping bonds, grading bonds, and so forth, once they comply with the building department's requirements and all conditions are met, some, most, all of that bond is returned to either the builder or the property owner. So bonds and deposits, I don't get overly concerned about that number. We mostly just budget a revenue amount. It's an estimate based on how much building activity, remodeling activity we might be anticipating in a given year. But we also know that a good portion of that goes back out in return money. So that's not really a revenue generator for us. But we do think that there's been some reduced activity in that regard. And the biggest, Mayor, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm under the impression that Pulte had cleared that phase at the north end of South Great Oaks right before the pandemic hit in January and February of this year. They did it over the winter because the weather was conducive. And right when they were going to start getting ready to put the undergrounds in, that's when the pandemic hit, and they might have put a temporary hold on further progress on that phase until they see how this is going to play out. Is that a correct statement, Mayor?
Yeah, that's a fair statement, Vern.
Okay,
came in and cleared them. They're on hold right now.
So that's just one example of proof we have that we're not going to get as many deposits and bonds that we had anticipated. So that's a nominal decrease. And then the all other categories, it's just number of them. You can see that of the total of 49 million, the 2.5 million, we throw the other 5% of all the other categories into that. Based on those categories and what Maggie and I see coming, we reduce those by the amount reflected in that fourth column, the 775,000. So the total is a $5.3 million estimated budget revenue reduction of the city's portion. It's the 44 million, the last number in the rust colored column, and
minus the 38 million. That's the revised number for the difference. And it's that number that I think will drive not necessarily the May budget amendment that you see before you next week, but it's going to drive the decisions that the mayor is going to present to you over the next month or two as far as his plan for how we're going to deal with that projected revenue shortfall. And at that, I'll stop talking about the revenue and just open it up to any questions or comments.
So Vernon, it looks like looking at your chart there, then we're at 38.6 million that you're revising to be our net revenue. It's going back to how it was 4 years ago, 2016. Looks like we're on par with what the revenue was back then, give or take a few hundred thousand in that. But this is subject to review. This is what it looks like today. Come the middle of June or so, we'd even probably have a better idea on how things are going. So this is kind of a fluid chart because again, we're in uncharted territory. We don't know if the pandemic is going to ease up a little bit or how the comeback, the economy coming back is going to take part. So I'm thinking this is something that we should be able to, hopefully you'd be able to update as figures get in, maybe on a monthly basis, because I don't see these being right on, dead on a month from now, because there's so many unpredictable things that could happen.
100% correct, and that's why I put a date on this spreadsheet, because every day I go in there and I update it with the current date that I updated, and I'm in this set of Excel spreadsheets frequently, and for the very reason you stated, especially now, we're not in a very stable time period where you can make some estimates, and they're kind of at least in the ballpark, and they're going to hold steady for a while. We might get our May collections and our June collections, and my head could be spinning either way to be positively surprised or even more negatively surprised than the 10% we're projecting. So you're 100% correct. I will update this continuously and always communicate that with the mayor and council.
And then probably what we'd do is once you feel comfortable and you do make a new projection or that, that's when we can schedule a finance meeting when you can get these figures out to us, maybe, like I say, you have enough on your plate too with just the ordinary day-to-day. And of course, this is like running two sets of figures because now we're constantly updating things. So this is a great chart. And I think I'd recommend for council, we should keep hold of these and then update them as every month goes by with the revised figures. It gives us a better idea of what we're dealing with too, as far as income is concerned, which will make a better, help us to make better decisions on the appropriations. That's all I wanted to say.
No, that's fine. I'm just waiting to see if anybody else has any questions or comments.
Sure, just jump in with anybody that wants to comment.
Yeah, I disagree. It's not a great chart. A great chart would be more positive.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was until mid-March. Our first quarter results mirrored many communities, and that the economy really, really was humming along, and most of us, including the state of Ohio, were actually tracking just slightly above projections. So we were on a very positive trend for 2020. And it's not the end of the world. I with things starting to open up now a little bit, I believe the governor's going to get that restaurant task force recommendations back. He'll be allowing those entities to open up soon. It's going to come back. It's just a question of when.
Mike, any other questions, Ken?
Yeah, my comment observation is that much more will be known August 15th. First of September, middle of September than now, because the tax deadline's been extended to July 15th. So any business that had a net profit in 2019 was still a good year for the economy. So they should still have taxable income and still a tax bill to be paid, but they've got till July 15th to pay it. I'm sure everyone's hoarding cash right now. So there is at least some opportunity for a slight positive surprise in terms of net profit tax payments that would come in July. But certainly the payroll tax issue, employment levels are going to be down. I think Independence generally fares well insofar as our Rockside Road tenant base is a service-based business that can work from home. Other businesses that other communities that may have more manufacturing warehouse sort of situation where they're shut down, they stop manufacturing, and if you're not manufacturing, you're not going to pay your people at all. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out, but I feel at least somewhat optimistic that the jobs in Independence, given the nature of them, could likely continue from home. Again, we'll see what each individual employer did and the effect, but all this will be known middle of August, early September.
Mr. Chairman, Councilman Sinek brings a good point about net profits tax and filing deadline change pushed later in the year. We're also having to, this is going to be a new situation looking forward. The impact of this work at home strategy that we were forced to embark upon, reading some of the different articles, talking to some of my colleagues, we're not sure where that's going to land permanently. It may be a gradual change. We're going to have to watch that. I believe that this year, if we can trend upward in the third quarter, fourth quarter, and get back to a new normal, so to speak, I think the next thing we need to do, be cognizant of is a more permanent shift. And we have to be very careful of two things. One, if the state changes, doesn't continue the emergency governor's resolution, I should say, where in the legislature, where you're going to pay your taxes to where your base of employment is, and rather than home, that's going to affect us. The other thing is, we get through this tsunami, the next one is going to be several years from now when there's a different strategy in place by the multiple of employers we have here. We have to be very cognizant of a change in strategy overall. We'll put that together, we'll discuss it as a group, and then we'll determine what we're going to do strategically long term. But there could be another wave of this 3 or 4 years from now, depending on how we get through this.
Your point is correct, and I was just online to see if I could confirm that it doesn't impact us tremendously. There might be an additional deferral because I'm getting some communications that might lead me to believe that the property tax, the second half collection deadline, has also been extended, just like the income tax filing deadline has been extended in Ohio. I don't know if you've gotten that yet.
I haven't seen that yet. I also want to comment on a comment you made earlier, Finance Director Blaze, about the citusing of wages for employees who are working from home. And Councilman Trakas made reference to this in the chat box, but the Ohio House did pass a bill, it's House Bill 197, that actually makes it a matter of law that for calendar year 2020, work from home is treated as work from principal place of employment, the normal office. That's the rule for 2020. It's not. It's tied to House Bill 197, not to the governor's state of emergency. So if an emergency order is lifted, that rule about employees still being taxed as if they're working in Independence, even though they're working from home, will continue for the balance of calendar year 2020. What the legislature did was suspend something called the 20-day rule. Essentially, if your employee works in another community for up to 20 days, you still treat them as working in the home office's location. Only on day 21 and after would you treat them as working in that remote location. Well, that 20-day rule is suspended for calendar year 2020.
Yeah, smart they did that, because that'd be chaos if they hadn't.
It would be.
For all of us. Employees,
yeah.
Now we would be surprised if there's some taxpayer challenge somewhere down the road to our current tax allocation strategy formula. But right now, that's great news, really, for us.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I don't see how they can put a municipality, I mean, because you budget and plan according to how the law reads. Something like this hits, that'd be really unfair to communities that have a big tax base like we do as far as wages go on that.
the other piece of the puzzle that is of some concern. In speaking with at least one business owner, as that person notices that about 75 or 80% of their staff is working from home, if they're successful with this particular arrangement, the potential, this person's evaluating, well, if their lease is done in 2 years, how much space will they need? They can really downsize their physical space, and that would make a difference, I would think, in the ability to fill the buildings. So that would also have an effect down the road.
Yeah, for sure.
Another offset to that, if you've read the articles recently that are out there, is that some of the office space that is doing the cubicles are thinking this may not be the way of the future. They may actually need more space as they try to social distance their own employees for their health. So I don't know how much impact that'll have as well. Both sides.
I'll vote for you, Kathleen.
All right.
I vote for her too.
Yeah.
I think it just points to how uncertain everything is as we
right. Right. Yeah.
Well, after the revenue side, there's the actual amendments to the annual appropriation ordinance, and that is listed as Exhibit A in the attachment. You can either reference that directly, or I set up a follow-up email at 244 to everybody, and it just outlined 5 bullet points of what the major changes were or are on this. And the first bullet point really isn't a change to the appropriations amendment. It's what we just talked about, that the revenue is going to decline and that we have to anticipate that and be ready for that. We are proposing a nominal decrease in the general fund appropriations, and it's primarily due to the Recreation and Community Services departments being effectively closed to the public for the last 6 weeks, and we don't know how long that's going to last, but they have reduced eliminated their part-timers to essentially nothing, because a lot of them were lifeguards and so forth. So we're just feeling that the amount we had originally appropriated in both Recreation and Community Services is now going to be a little bit high. We took a little bit of those down. It won't affect any current employees. The slight nominal decrease that you see won't affect. It won't require the mayor to lay anybody off. It's just, hey, they've been operating not at all 8 cylinders. Doesn't look like they're going to be on 8 cylinders for a while yet, so we could tap back a little bit on the amount that we have appropriated there. We also decreased the economic development appropriation a little bit to reflect the fact that the position's been vacant effectively for, it'll be 2 months at least, from mid-March through mid-May. And the fact that the original appropriation that you see was $245,000 for wages, salaries, and benefits, that anticipated the economic development director, him or herself, working the entire 12 months along with an assistant, singular, like there used to be. And because that assistant has not been in place for the first 4 months and doesn't appear to be on the near-term horizon, we were comfortable dialing back the amount appropriated in the economic development department. That's the third bullet point. It necessitated a little bit of an increase in general government. Megan, do you have any, like, just the high point? Unemployment. We have had a lot of our part-timers that were not let go, but they just realized, hey, pool's closed, you don't need part-time lifeguards. The civic center's closed, you don't need the attendants upstairs, and so forth. So I don't know if they were ever technically laid off in a technical sense, but a number of them have filed for unemployment.
That will
when
cause
I was talking about whether there should be a public meeting or not.
Cost to go up
yeah,
because the rates we pay are based
care.
on our claims history. Like everybody, the claims history
is
going through the roof. So
a month ago or so?
That's why the general government goes up, but on a gross basis, total general fund was originally appropriated at $24.5 million. Because of the subtractions and the additions, we still have that down by a little over 200,000. So that's going in the correct direction.
But you said if it was less lots, which it is.
We needed to recognize the strike force revenue. We already talked about that. And then the last bullet point was the two change orders that were approved last month, the $300,000 for Fabrizi for the Rockside Woods Boulevard North, $150,000 for Lafayette with the cats. We technically didn't have to amend the appropriations ordinance yet for those. We would have at some point because that $150,000 was a material amount, but we had enough in there right now that we could have paid those out if we had to, but we figure it's going to happen. So let's attack that now. The one we really needed to have the appropriation amendment adjusted for was for the $229,000 in change payment to J.D. Williamson for the Hemlock Trail overages. So that's essentially the budget amendment that's before you, the appropriations amendment. It's reflecting revenue is going to be down, but again, you don't appropriate revenues. Well, your appropriations are maximum expenditures. We don't legislate revenues. We're going to decrease the general fund appropriations a little bit. Strike force gets increased because it's a pass through, and then we had to reflect the $229,000 payment to J.D. Williamson. So that's the net effect of what you're being asked to approve in May. I suspect, as all of us do, that the heavy lifting is still to come, whether the proposed way to get us through and steer this ship through the next few months is attacking the operating budget, delaying, deferring, cutting out capital purchases, delaying, deferring infrastructure projects, or some combination of all three. That decision has not been made. It's not the finance department's decision. Certainly we play a role in that by assisting the mayor and assisting department directors by giving them information as to what would happen if decision X is made or decision Y is made and how that would affect the financial picture of the city. But it's really council's decision and the mayor's decision as to what gets done to navigate these uncharted waters. So again, in summary, the May budget amendment, the amendments to the annual appropriations ordinance that'll be on your agenda next week. It's nothing more complicated than what I just articulated there. So I'm open to any questions on that at this point.
Vern, I'm looking at the street resurfacing. So it looks like it was at 6 million and now it's at 4.7 million. I'm on page 2.
Yes.
Fund 420.
Correct.
So that reflects that reduction of 1.3.
The 6 million was an initial estimate based on what we see is going to be passed through that fund. We were comfortable reducing it, but Maggie, correct me if I'm wrong, I recall that last Utilities Committee meeting, it was a known fact that prior to that, at the April meeting, council approved the two creek maintenance contracts for $200,000 each or $400,000 total, but Engineer Ream also outlined at the Utilities Committee meeting a couple million dollars of additional projects that could be done. Right now, we're not budgeting for that. We're budgeting based on what council has approved, and we're comfortable going from that 6 to 4.7 million based on the legislation that's been adopted so far. But should the mayor, should council, should the collective body take the necessary action and say, well, the $400,000 is not enough for 2020, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and it's going to cost X amount, then, Chairman, then you're correct, that number, that 4.7 million number you see would likely have to be then amended back on.
I see, right.
He made no such recommendation, but that is possible. There's a lot of ideas out there, but we can not make a recommendation to that one will be allocated in the March meeting.
That's correct, and that's why we stayed with just what council has approved thus far. We didn't go so far as to add, well, okay, Engineer Ram, he presented X million dollars worth of additional projects, throw that in there. No, we have to wait until council takes action and the mayor takes action before we'll start putting pen to paper to make changes like that.
Any other questions from council?
Can I ask?
Oh, Jim.
Yeah, thank you. I was just curious, do we pay unemployment compensation for part-time employees?
If they're employed and they file for unemployment and they've made enough money to qualify under the state's minimum hurdle, then if the state pays them, then that ultimately is reflected in the premiums that we have to pay going forward. I believe, Maggie, what we pay out in unemployment is based on our past unemployment claims history. So every employer that's been forced to furlough, lay off, terminate employees is going to be faced with this dynamic that what they pay out for unemployment going forward will be higher than they did in the past if they haven't been in any type of layoff or furlough mode.
I would just say from a policy perspective,
hey, Jim, you're really muted, Jim.
What I'm just saying is that I don't think we should be paying part-time employees unemployment compensation. We should like that type of thing. I mean, part-time is part-time. It's not a full-time employee. Do we have a policy about that?
There's nothing to fight there, Councilman. If they were an employee getting W-2 income from any employer, us or working the front desk at Dairy King all summer, if they made enough in part-time, meet the minimum hurdle that the state says, they're eligible for unemployment. We don't pay unemployment for them. We employ them, and should somebody happen to become unemployed that was in our payroll, that's when it affects us, and that's why we're going to be affected, because we've had part-time employees who made enough money to qualify under the state's minimum hurdle, and that's why we're going to get hit a little bit.
I think the interesting thing too is I've had two residents, not city employees, but just two residents who are part-time, and they are making more on their state unemployment than they were working part-time.
Well, I heard that too, Kelly.
If I would surmise that maybe that's a true statement if you add in the additional $600 a week that the federal government includes.
Right, that's correct.
If you don't, it's my understanding that you will only make from the state in unemployment a certain percentage of what you made when you were employed, but it's not anywhere close to 100% of what you made. So the only way that you can that statement to be true is by adding in that $600 a week that some employees were eligible through.
Right, and that was what it was including, Vern, yes.
Yeah, that's a dynamic, Councilperson Capusta, that's a lot of employers are faced with as they start to open up now, especially the ones when the restaurants start opening up, trying to get employees because they made X amount as a kitchen assistant, and now when you have that $600 a week, $600 a week times 50 weeks, that's $30,000 right there plus the unemployment. So if they were a part-time employee and making $12,000-$15,000 a year, yeah, the numbers are in their favor right now to not go back too quickly. So unless the federal government cuts that $600 off, and then that'll get them back to work.
Well, that's cut off, I believe, July 31st currently, but they're talking about it taking it till the end of the year right now. But it is affecting people's judgment to go back to work. Now, if you do have a job and you're called back to work and you refuse, then you just can cut off the unemployment approval.
So, Vern, I have a question. I'm just thinking outside the box here and putting the government incentives in perspective. If we were to renegotiate our union contracts for a year, I don't know what we gave them for 2020, I think 2% or 3%. And we were to take that and they push it back 1 year, would they be able to recoup that from the government in some form where it would save us 3%, but yet they would be whole by recouping that from the government?
Yeah, and the response I could give to that somewhat related is if the city or any employer, let's say they have a 40-hour-a-week employee and they want to take them down to 32 hours, basically work 4 days a week instead of five if they're an 8-hour employee, they would be making their compensation for the 32 hours, and then there's this additional program available that it's like unemployment compensation that they could collect for the additional 8 hours that they're not being employed. Whereas in the past, to collect unemployment insurance, you had to be unemployed, period. And so your question is a little bit different. It's not, hey, if we cut some people's hours, can they make up that revenue, that lost wages somewhere else, which they could. Your question is, if we took the raise that was negotiated into the contracts for 2020 and pushed it to 2021, would there be a way for them to make that money up? Is that the question?
I guess so. In the long run, it would save us some money and help us through the difficult times, and yet they would remain whole by a different source.
Right. I doubt it, but I commend your thinking on the box, and that's not to say it wouldn't happen. I think the first logistical hurdle we would have is we're sitting here on May 5th. Those employees have already been paid one-third of that pay increase through the end of April. So if you ask them to forego that for 2020, yeah, they could forego what's still ahead of us for 2020, but then we would also need to get back what was given already. And I think you'd be asking for a pretty big logistical and political hurdle with that. So keep the ideas coming. No, I think the mayor and myself would welcome any creative ideas of how the city can conserve cash, whether it's reduce expenses, defer delay expenses, defer delay capital purchases, infrastructure projects, any and all of those I think are fair game for discussion. And I've got to think that the mayor will be ready sooner rather than later to propose a plan for dealing with this to your body.
Yeah, one of the questions council asked, at least should influence, if nothing else, is the pay increases for non-bargaining people. Now, there's another example of that balancing act that we always have to, that dynamic we live with. So you have to keep that in mind, too.
Which, for clarification purposes, it's not written in stone anywhere, but the past practice has always been whatever wage increase is negotiated and granted and approved for the bargaining units, that's generally the wage increase that the whatever mayor it was at the time would try to grant to the non-bargaining employees. So whereas the bargaining employees started to get their 2020 wage increase with the first pay of 2020, the non-bargaining have not gotten any increase this year so far. So if it was granted to them, then a decision has to be made. Do you keep them whole on par with the union, with the bargaining unit employees and make it retroactive January 1, or do you save some money and start it whenever it's granted? All decisions that have to be made.
Vern, getting back, you know, to that Exhibit A that you provided us, could you give us a little explanation on page 3, the TIF funds, the highlighted areas that you have there?
Yeah, that's just the classic moving around of money.
Yeah.
Northeast quadrant one, that's the big jump from $12,000 to $312,000. Most of that we needed to account for the $300,000 change order with Fabrizi. Mm-hmm. And the one from zero for Selig TIF to $225,000, we had some funds on in that account, in that fund, and the change order or the additional payment approved by council at the April council meeting, almost $230,000. We only needed $225,000 to make that number work. So that's the big two. It's the Northeast quadrant where we had to make the Fabrizi payment and the Selig TIF TIF fund where we have to make the J.D. Williamson payment.
What's the Hillside 21, that extra $70,000?
It goes from 50 to 70. That's up $20,000. It's reflecting the engineering or the bill we received regarding some additional engineering work. That project that it's on council of the mayor's horizon for the sidewalks and
sidewalks
north side of Hillside from Homoga east to Twin Creeks.
Mm-hmm. And then finally the Northwest quarter that went up $20,000.
Yeah, it went up 20. We still get some, if you know, there's the development agreement with, IRG, Industrial Revenue Group, or Industrial Realty Group. They're still doing work behind the scenes on that, is my understanding. And apparently they've had some consultation with the law department for direction on that. I'm not saying that they've used up $20,000 of additional time of Greg O'Brien's and his associates, but when we receive the law department's invoice each month, we try to break it down and charge the gross amount into the appropriate fund, and it all doesn't just go into that general legal services in the general government general fund. We try to charge it off into the appropriate fund, and we must have caught over the last couple of months some billings, line item billings, appropriate pertaining to the Northwest quadrant. So we just proposed additional couple thousand into the Northwest quadrant to account for that.
I see. And that would be a good topic, maybe one of our workshops, to see what the status of that arrangement is there for that with that company, because there's really, I don't think we've gotten any update on that for a whole year or so, or close to a year.
Correct. I think if you saw in the mayor's administrative update a week or two ago, an offer has been made and accepted to a new economic development director, and it's my understanding that person will hopefully start before this month is out. And if that's the case, I think we'll be able to get back on track a little bit better with some of the economic development issues. The mayor and I have been trying to do what we can in lieu of no Jeremy sitting in the office next to me, but we're all being forced to wear many hats right now. It's not the ideal situation, but it's the hand we've been dealt with, and we have to play it. We're excited about the new economic development director, as I'm sure all of you will be. I think this individual is very compatible with the mindset that Jeremy brought to it. And I know we all appreciated the job that Jeremy did and the path he set us on as far as economic development. I could sit here today and the mayor could chime in I am 100% confident that the new economic development director will do all of that and hopefully more. And I've got a great relationship with Jeremy. I miss him already, but I think from a business perspective, I think that the new economic development director is going to be, you're going to like this individual, and you're going to like what this person brings to the table, and you're going to like what this person does for Independence regarding economic development. It's exciting. Yeah, that gets to your point, Chairman, about getting on top of, say, the details of this development agreement. We'll be more on top of that when this individual comes aboard and hits the ground and starts being able to fill in the gaps that the mayor and I have not been able to fill in these last 6 weeks.
And I would like this, just a suggestion. I know that in all the years I've been in council, I know Doc Asaf, for 10 years, I think, was the chairman of that economic development committee, and I think Ken is now the chairman. But it'd be nice, once this person is on board, to have a committee meeting there, and probably all council would want to be there, just to introduce her, and so we can ask some questions and get to know her. Because that, to me, Jeremy was one of the key, besides the mayor and the finance director, I look forward to the information and the advice, everything we got from Jeremy. That's like our bloodline and everything. And it'd be nice to have that same comfort level with the new person that comes. It'd be nice to hit the floor running, that we can ask some questions, find out a little more about this person, and get a close relationship with that person from the floor running. Because basically it'd be a stranger, and I speak for myself. I don't know how my other council be, especially the four that have been on with me for a number of years, is that that you want to have a comfort level with that person that really has the what our philosophy is. And like I said, when Jeremy left, I mean, that was a big blow. I enjoyed his, you know, his expertise and what he brought to the city, and I hope to get to that same level with the new person. I think the rest of council probably the same way. So maybe, Ken, this is just once that person does get, it'd be nice to have a meeting to just kind of go over the philosophy and meeting that person. I know the mayor has vetted that person out, and I have full confidence he hired an excellent person, but it'd be nice for us to get to know that person too.
For sure. For well, sure. I mean, first of all, who said it was a she, Dave? Come on.
Well, I'm trying to be proactive.
Certainly like the mayor didn't.
It might be a he, I don't know.
But serious, no, you're correct. And the finance director is accurate. As a matter of fact, let me just say this, that in speaking with her current employer.
It is a she.
But that.
It is a she.
See, my premonition was correct.
the fact of the matter is, our current employer, when I spoke with him, he asked me if I could delay the start for a month. Now, that speaks volumes in terms of her, what she can bring to the table, and I'm excited. You'll be as excited, and yeah, Ken, I look forward to meeting, economic development meeting, but it won't take long to settle in. But we have, I can just say this, there's large plans, large opportunities. It's going to be transformational to a certain extent, and with a variety of other tangential benefits to this. So, but we will be going back to council, and once we get seated, for your support in restructuring certain aspects of how we deliver our services.
And Mayor, you have made a decision on a communications director also, my understanding?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you'll read in the update this weekend, we've got we had three. The latest is that today we swore in the firefighter, paramedic, to replace the one that left. The communications person will start Thursday, and then the economic development director will start later this month. So three important positions, and that was really heartwarming. You'll hear about it or see it. But though we had to do swearing in with our masks and social distancing, which was unique, similar to what we created this, like the finance director alluded to earlier about the courts and how we're holding court. It's going to be a different dynamic with how we go to business, but this is exposing different opportunities for us, and we're embracing them. And so I'm hopefully that you'll be able to do the same thing when we get to that point.
Oh, we're excited. At least I'm excited to meet these new individuals, and hoping, like you say, they brought to the table what Jeremy and people like Jeremy. It's exciting to know that we got some quality people here.
Let me just throw out this nugget for you to chew on. The new economic development director is totally on board with the city's practice of using tax increment financing as a revenue producing strategy, so much to the point that an economic development finance book was written years ago, and she authored the tax increment financing chapter to that book. So that's why I can't say that I we all love Jeremy. He did phenomenal for the city, but I'm just as excited for his replacement because I think she brings so much to the table that you will gain a similar type comfort level with her that you had with Jeremy. It helps that she grew up in Independence and currently lives in Independence, and short of her being able to come back and work for the community that she grew up in, the community where she graduated from high school from, and the community that she currently lives in, I don't think Mayor Kurtz would have been successful in getting her to consider coming here for any amount of money in the world. She was very, very satisfied with her current employer, had been there for 11 years now or more, knocking it out of the park. But the once in a lifetime opportunity to come back and work for her quote unquote home community was just an offer that she had to take a flyer on and had to see, wow, what can I do for my community? And so she's going to bring that element to the table too, because she's invested in the community and that's personal to her, and she wants to see this city succeed as bad as any one of us do.
And already the communications director, is communication director from Independence also, or from another community?
Actually grew up in Parma, spent time in the number of communities throughout the country, coming back from Virginia.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I can speak for myself. I'm excited about meeting these people. And once we get past this, this hiccup we've had now and everything, it'll be great to have some refreshing and some new set of eyes and a new voice and mind working for the city too. So that's going to be a big plus.
I heard a number of you voiced your thoughts relative to these positions the last several months, and I think you'll be excited about the knowledge, the breadth of experience, and how they can hit the ground running for Independence because they know Independence. And be prepared, because some of these are going to offer some great opportunities to raise the bar, similar to what we did when we brought Jeremy on board. And so this is another opportunity to, and with the newly created communications person, it's going to really create some, I'm excited because we're going to create some synergy and raise the bar in a number of areas. And you can't say enough about, not to minimize the new hire for the fire department, because I was going to say earlier that, we had social distancing, but you can't believe the number of team members from the fire department that showed up for the swearing in. Yeah. And it was just that I thank them all for their commitment and dedication on behalf of all of us, for their continued dedication to serve. But it was very heartwarming to see them, all of them show up for the swearing in. And it was unique when you have masks on and you're social distancing. and now we even put X's on the ground, so where I stood and everybody stood, so that we could accommodate things that, such as this, similar to what we're doing with the court. So we're transitioning, but you know, it's not boring for sure.
Mayor, this is somewhat aside, but when you in your newsletter on Friday, when you talked about Jacob Kinzett, I hope that we can continue to do that throughout the weeks ahead during this pandemic. I have heard so much positive feedback from residents on that, and we know that through our own resident firefighters, as well as I'm sure through many, you know, like Councilperson Trakas serving and other people serving in hospital positions, I think that's just a real positive thing for us to do.
We will, and you can't say enough about the front line, those people that are just sacrificing, and the caregivers in the hospitals, that those are the ones that really, and their families are raising the bar.
Very, very good. Thank you, Mayor. And
Mr. Chairman, is there anything else you want to say about the Economic Development Director? Because, you know, just want to make sure you've...
Well, like I said, we want to get, I think we've heard quite a bit, and are you going to give a kind of a bio, a little bit, it's not in your report, this?
Absolutely.
Good.
I wanted to be fair. I don't want to, with her timing, with this unique situation, but when I talked to her employer, they asked for that time, it reflects well on her. But I also wanted to be fair for him too. So these are just the dynamics of bringing on quality people. So yeah, absolutely. You'll get a full, and then eventually we'll get through this and we'll be able to communicate face to face. But yeah, you'll be excited, I believe.
Very good, thank you. Now to my committee, is there any other questions regarding the that topic one, the amendment to the annual appropriations you have for either our finance director or for the mayor and everything before we move on to the next, or if there's any more, Vern, that you have to offer on this subject?
No, I served on council for 16 years and I don't recall ever having an hour discussion on an amendment to an appropriations ordinance, but I'm very glad to have it. I think the more information council has, the better. I've said it before, I'll say it again, it just helps you make better informed decisions for your constituents.
And I believe very also you gave a narrative, a verbal narrative of the changes too that we can read, that would some of the changes that you had on your on the
correct. Those are technical in nature, and Maggie came up with that 3.5-page sheet. I appreciate my team's assistance, and those are more technical. We transferred this, we advanced that, but if that turns you on, you want to read it, have at it. We included it.
Very good. My committee or any other council member, any questions for Vern or the mayor?
Hello.
I guess hearing not, we'll move on to the second item, the initial discussion of the 2021 tax budget.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. Same thing with that one. In all the years that I served in the legislative body here, the tax budget was always, I won't say a throwaway, but it was more of a technicality to comply with Ohio Revised Code provisions that require each public body to develop a tax budget. I remember at that point, we used to have to hold a public hearing prior to council being able to adopt it. And I don't recall anybody ever showing up for a tax budget public hearing, let alone having anything to say about it. Again, it was more to comply with some technical requirements. I do think it takes on some added importance at this point in time due to, if you read the email this afternoon, to the talk in the community about inside millage and so forth, and that's why I'm glad Councilman Sinek is on the call today, because I'm sure he did a lot of research regarding inside millage over the last couple of years, and
I know what I know, but I'm sure he can take your inside millage topic discussion to even new levels. I would say the most important part of the tax budget that we need to look at is Schedule 1, and it's pretty simple to follow because there's really only two lines there, and that is the schedule where public bodies request their, oh, there's Councilman Sinek's posting it online there.
Yep, I've shared my screen, so hopefully you can all see that.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you, Ken, we do.
In the way you don't even have to find it in your email, but this is the schedule where a public body requests, in our case, just inside millage. We don't have outside millage to request from the county. The school district does, and so their Schedule 1 is a little bit longer than ours with the number of line items, but this is a draft. I drafted it. It's based on the current assessed value in the community of $484 million. That does not include some almost $80 million of assessed value property in TIF districts, but apparently the taxes are levied on the assessed value, and the assessed value number does not include the TIF district valuations. That's a separate calculation. So past practice here has been the city requests a little bit of money for the general fund, which includes a little bit that goes to the fire pension, and then some money to supplement what goes into the police pension fund. And you see, based on the amount of mills in the second last column times the evaluate the assessed valuation shown at the bottom, it calculates to the $900,000 and change that would go to the general fund, and $145,000 and change that would go to the police pension fund. Those millage numbers, the 1.9 and the 0.3, are the same that was requested of the County Budget Commission last year, and for purposes of this discussion, it's what I placed in Schedule 1 at this time. Obviously, there are some different schedules, but our debt schedule and other schedules, the debt is what it is right now. We're not asking for any new debt, so those are more per functuary, or they're there because they have to be, but the biggest determinant of what we're going to get revenue-wise is the inside millage here and the 2.2 mills that are on this initial draft proposal. So that's really all I have on the tax budget. I did indicate, I'll say one more thing, I did indicate in the email that there is a Schedule 3 or Schedule 2 that we will have for you long before this needs to be adopted, but that's a sheet that has a bunch of numbers with transfers and advances, and it's a very complicated spreadsheet, but it's one that is included in this document nonetheless. If we want to discuss it, we'll do our best to discuss it in any manner of detail that council wants to. That is the very in-the-weeds document that just kind of quantifies for the Budget Commission what amount of money we project to start 2021 with, what we project to come in, what we project to spend, and what would be left over at the end of the year. So it's a fairly fluid number because nobody knows here in May of 2020 what those numbers of 2021 are going to look like yet. All we can do is the same thing we did with the revenue projections, is that make some estimates and some projections based on our best estimates and our best reading of the tea leaves, what's going to happen going forward, put the pen to paper, put it down, and knowing that through the amendment process, we have
up to 12 cracks before council in any given year, and more if needed, to amend a budget and appropriations ordinance. So in my mind, the main primary purpose of the tax budget is to request the inside millage. And again, we're requesting the 2.2 mills in this draft initial version that I have before you. And that's all I have. I'll open up to either questions or discussion point at this point.
Vern, do you anticipate this being on this legislation being on first reading in May and then vote on it in June, or first reading in June and
No, I'm still comfortable with that. We technically could adopt it at the July council meeting on July 14th, but that only gives us one day to get it down to the budget commission on the 15th. I would prefer we keep it on first reading in May. We could have other meetings if we end up having more meetings about the tax budget, and we still have till June 9th to adopt it. And if we don't, we could call a special meeting for late June, early July. My preference would be just don't adopt it on July 14th. That's cutting us really, really close.
Yeah, that's too, yeah.
If by chance it didn't get four votes, we would be in a pickle there.
Could I?
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
So before we talk about scheduling a vote on this document, I think there's a much larger, more important discussion council and the mayor needs to have, which is to say this 2.2 mills is a maximum amount. It is within council's and the mayor's power to levy less than 2.2 mills. Now, last month, Councilman Trakas introduced legislation to provide a stimulus for our business community to try to help through this COVID-19 crisis, and you know, reducing property taxes is a way to provide a stimulus for our community in terms of less property taxes. If this raises property owners, both residential and commercial, pay less in property taxes in calendar year 2021. So it is within council's power and purview to levy less than 2.2 mills. We could levy 2.3 mills, but that would take 1/10 of a mill away from the school district. And I'm not sure anybody wants to do that. But I think council can and should have a discussion, you know, kind of as an add-on to Councilman Trakas' stimulus ordinance from last month, as well as, you know, COVID-19, as well as the potential effects on this a year from now for our school district. There's many layers to that onion, and I'd really like for us to have a discussion about it before we just move to vote on this as is.
A good point, Ken. I was going to ask the mayor. Mayor, you've been here many, many years. Has that 2.2 changed in the time that you've been here? Or because it seems to me that's been a constant, that 2.20 total inside millage has been constant since I've been associated with the city for 17, 18 years.
I believe there might have been a tenth of a mill adjustment periodically over the past couple of decades. A tenth here, a tenth there. I think there was a tenth or two that wasn't used by the city, or I think it went down. Can't recall off the top of my head exactly how much, but it's been a nominal decrease. But for when the people, I'm saying over the last two decades, probably a tenth or two. Ken mm-hmm. might know the answer to that, though.
Yeah, I think it's been the same since 1928, frankly. In 1928, it changed. It was either 1920 or 1933. It used to be a 15 mil limitation, and then it changed to 10. And when it changed from 15 down to 10, there was a change between the school district and the city, but I think it has stayed unchanged since the 1930s.
That's my understanding too. Yeah, Ken, how much does the school, the inside millage, they get roughly what,
6.3.
And so there's 1.5 that the community is allowed, but that has not been taken or levied over the...
Well, the Cuyahoga County levies the other 1.5 of the 10.
I see.
Does the county automatically pick up any unused inside millage then, Ken?
It has to be requested on this budget form. The County Budget Commission is the one who arbiters all these, the inside millage for all the taxing districts. So, you know, City of Independence will submit its tax budget. The school district will submit its tax budget to the County Budget Commission. County Budget Commission matches them all up, make sure no one's levying more than 10 mils. And if somebody were, there is some provisions in the law that says, okay, school district, your maximum share is this. City, your maximum share is this. Work it out. But that's the commission's job, is to arbiter those sorts of disputes.
Correct. That's my understanding. But since between the city and the school, and only 8.5 mils is being requested of the Budget Commission, that other 1.5, was I mistaken when I thought I heard you say the county gets that then?
The county does levy 1.5 mils of inside millage across all of Cuyahoga County. So the school district and city governments are left to split the remaining 8.5.
Oh, in the very so we are at the max then?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now there's not additional 1.5 out there that can be grabbed.
Correct. It's all spoken for.
Good. Thank you.
On a $100,000 house, then the value of a tenth of a mil would be how much?
Well, $100,000 house would be taxed at 35%, which is $35,000, divided by 1,000 is 35, and you multiply that times 1 mil, Councilman Sinek, would be $35. So, Councilman Baverka, if your question is what would 1/10 of a mil be, that would equate to what, $3.50? Am I doing the math in my head correctly?
Yeah, I did some calculations on it, but I was working off a medium home value of $250,000 is the medium home value in Independence. And 1.6 mils would equate to roughly $150 savings, I believe, to the median homeowner. Of course, commercial property owners with higher value properties would see a similar benefit. But Councilman Trakas' plan introduced last month had some administrative challenges to it in terms of how you pass out grant money to businesses. And this one is an across-the-board savings for all property owners that really requires no administration for anybody in the mayor's office or the finance director's office. This would just be leaving more money in the homeowner's property owner's bank account as a stimulus, and is also as a potential way of sharing revenue in the future with the school district.
Well, it's definitely something to think about. I just hate, especially nowadays with what's going on with our finances and the, I feel uncomfortable reducing our income at any point, not knowing what, maybe if conditions were different and we're having our best year ever and things are looking great, that'd definitely be something to look into. But at this point, I still think $1 million from our revenue from income is substantial, especially since we're going to be losing another, like, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 million, what Vern projected, maybe even more. But
so I have another schedule that informs my thinking on this that I'd like to share with you for just a moment.
Sure.
So, you know, 30 years experience as a CPA, so I'm a numbers guy. And one of the basic financial statements in for-profit business is called a statement of cash flows. So I took the principles of a statement of cash flows and used it to kind of take some of the numbers the finance director has provided and reformat them in terms of a statement of cash flows. Statement of cash flows takes an entity's cash in and cash out and puts it into three separate buckets, which is to say cash flows from operating activities, cash flows from investing activities, and cash flows from financing activities. Your investing activities are your capital expenditures, you know, your roads and bridges and streets and sidewalks. Financing is borrowed money and interest and fees on that. And everything else is operating. So this actual history rolls forward the City of Independence's cash balance from at January 1st, 2016, we had $20 million in the bank. And December 31st, 2019, we had $40 million in the bank. This schedule reconciles 4 years worth of cash in and cash out. So what informs my thinking on this whole concept is mostly this revenue over expenses from operating activities. Each and every year for the years 2016 through 19, we've had $13 million, $14 million, $18 million, $17 million of positive cash left over after all the city's operating expenses are covered. That's the police department, the fire department, the rec department, all of the basic functions of government are covered, and there's still $13 to $18 million left over. We use that money to spend approximately $9 or $10 million a year on permanent improvements. I've taken a lot of look at what other communities around us spend for permanent improvements, and we spend a lot. We have abundance here. North Royalton, the community with three or four times our land mass, spends $3 million a year, $4 million a year. What we have to spend for capital improvements is amazing opportunities. And then, of course, we have debt and borrowing and repaying of debt. But I'm confident about coronavirus or no, I'm confident about the future because of this surplus being over $10 million. Yeah, it's not going to be as big of a surplus come 2020, but revenue would have to drop to depression levels, and we'd all be in a world of hurt if this ever turned negative. This will still be a positive number going out to the future to cover all of our operating expenses. We're in a great place, not as good as if COVID-19 wouldn't have happened, but we're still in a great place. And if I get the chance, Mayor, I'll share with you my thoughts about reopening and finances and all that. But my decision is focused largely on this significant, almost $15 million to $20 million excess after we pay all our basic operating costs. So if we were to reduce inside millage by 1.6 mils, that's about $800,000 of less revenue for the city. That's $800,000 money saved for our property owners and not a huge impact on a business, an entity that has $40+ million of revenue a year. So it's not a huge, certainly you don't want to lose any dollars, but to my way of thinking, an $800,000 reduction in property taxes from the reduction inside millage is not negative. No one's going to lose their job. No program is going to be cut because of that. But what it can do for our school system and what it can do for our property owners to let them hold on to that money for a year during this difficult time is pretty amazing. And I have much, much more data I can share with you. This has been a passion of mine for 4 years. And this is a brief overview, but this is what shapes my thinking. I'm quite certain that the City of Independence can afford it, but the bigger payoff for what it could do for our school and our community for that $800,000 is just amazing.
Now, something like this, it would have to be approved on a yearly basis, year by year, I would think. We approve this tax budget on a yearly basis every July.
It's an excellent question. Let me back on the screen here. My computer is not sharing the screen. So, inside millage and the 20 mil, something called the 20 mil floor, that essentially the city would have to do this year, do nothing next year, and the school would be good for perpetuity. And it all has to do with something called the 20 mil floor. That if the school district reduces its inside millage that's currently levied for general operating. The 20 mil floor will kick in. The school district will collect the same amount of money. The property owners will have to pay more taxes to the city. Essentially, the city, if it undoes this in year three, will have enacted an unvoted tax increase on the people. The school district will be fine, again, because of the 20 mil floor. Again, it's complicated. We could have a separate meeting just to talk about that. But short answer is the 20 mil floor protects the school district if the city ever changes its mind somewhere down the road.
So was that a yes or a no, though? I'm sorry, Ken, maybe I misunderstood too Dave's question.
So the city would need to act this year to reduce inside millage, then not increase it again next year. If those two things happen, there would be no adverse effect at any point in the future to the school district if the city ever again wanted to reclaim this inside millage, which it could do, but what it would do is trigger an unvoted tax increase on the people, no revenue loss to the schools.
So if the city declined, Ken, to take their 2.20, then the schools would pick that up like next year, or?
The budget commission says there's this thing called free millage. The Independence, City of Independence were not to levy this millage. It would create free millage, levy inside the 10 mil limitation that's not allocated to any tax districts known as free millage. That free millage has to be there according to the county budget commission. So by us not levying it this year, it creates free millage that the school district could levy next year.
I see. So be just a just 1 year reduction for taxes for this year, then next year it would go back to the current level?
Right, except the revenue would then flow to the school district instead of to the city.
I understand now.
And now the other nuance of inside millage for in the hands of a school district, it's levied for permanent improvements. The school district can use that revenue to support a bond. So if the city, I should say the school district has $800,000 of annual revenue from this inside millage for permanent improvement, they can take a loan out for 30 years using that $800,000 as the repayment source. And depending on what interest rate you use, that $800,000 that the city gives up could turn into $15 million next year for our school district to build a new school building, to fund repairs to existing buildings, but can only be used for permanent improvements. Can't be used for fund salaries or anything like that, just permanent improvements. So $800,000 to the city quickly turns into $15 million for our schools. And that's the real power of this idea, is the nuances of what inside village means to the schools.
So let's say 3 or 4 years down the line, the sitting council at that point in time in administration felt that money was needed back, that millage was needed back. Is there a vehicle for them to take that back?
So what would happen in that regard, when we do this tax budget, instead of levying less, we would levy our guaranteed minimum share again. That would go to the County Budget Commission. The County Budget Commission would say, hey, wait a minute, when we add up what the school district got, that's more than 10, that can't happen. There's a law that says how much the school's entitled to, the city's entitled to. The city would get what it's legally entitled to, the higher rate again. But the schools would have to give up some of their inside millage that's levied for general operating. And the school district is at the 20 mil floor. So when we take away inside millage that's levied for general operating, the 20 mil floor will fill that back up again. And so the school district will not lose any revenue, but the city will collect more. And the net effect is an unvoted tax increase on the people enacted by the Council of City of Independence. School district is unharmed, again, because of something called the 20 mil floor. And I could show this a little bit better on a spreadsheet, but that's the...
So if that were needed, and you're really way ahead.
I get it, it's technical.
But so if that were needed...
We have a meeting on just this.
Right, so if the city felt that were needed, I understood the process, I think, where you said it could be petitioned to the county and everything, but then I also heard you say that that would result in an unvoted tax levy to our residents.
Correct.
Well, that would be a popular group to be in that year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that, yeah. So it's that's why I think that creates such pressure that's unlikely to ever happen in future councils. If we were to do this now, they could, but unvoted tax increase is a pretty popular unpopular thing to do. And for $800,000 of revenue on an entity that's going to continue to, whose revenue is going to continue to rise.
Now, Ken, you say $800,000, but I think, isn't it $1 million that 2.2 generates?
That's 2.2. We have to do all. I mean, we could do half a mil. We could do one mils. We could do, I've always used the number 1.6 mils because.
Oh, I see. I see.
Point, I don't want to, you know, I totally, now more than ever, respect and appreciate our first responders. And we levy 0.6 mil for police and fire pensions, and no one wants to, you know, get involved in that. So.
I see. So you're leaving the 0.6 for the pensions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's.
I see.
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Well, we could levy zero. Okay. That, there's a reasonable to all this, but.
I get you. So you're looking just at the.
We could do half a mil a year for the next 4 years or whatever we want to do, but we should have a discussion about this because the impact for our school district is so huge. And what it does for, you know, try to attempt to pass a future levy, they can throw out and say, hey, we've got sort of this other thing with our city. We're pooling our community's resources in this amazing way that's not going to cost taxpayers, you know, additional money out of their pocket. There's so much here that we can and should think about before we just race to, hey, let's do it the way we've always done.
I concur that there is a lot there, and I think, and I respect that you put in a yeoman's amount of study into this, Ken, but I have to go back, I guess, right now, and this is probably just the conservative in me, I have to go back to Vice Mayor Grindel's comments, his initial comments about, is this the timing for it? I'm so apprehensive about what the future may hold economically for us as a city that I don't know that I would even at this point want to entertain further discussion about this. I mean, if we checked with all council persons and the majority felt it was something they're interested in and even considering at this time, I, you know, would obviously go along to get further knowledge, but I don't know if we have that kind of consensus. I'd like to, I guess, get hear something from the other council persons as to whether they would even consider at this point in time putting our city into this kind of a financial decision with what we're facing from external factors. Not to say that we would never look at it again, but I just don't know if the timing right now is something that makes me comfortable.
And I agree with you, Kathleen. I'm kind of nervous, even my own finance. I always try to be conservative so that I know that I've, you know, more than a fallback. That's why I can't understand sometimes some of these businesses, they only live day to day and everything. I try to provide the worst case scenario that we can still survive if some bad things do happen like we're having now. And I'd be awfully leery, especially where we're not dealing with our own, but we're dealing with our city's revenue, and we're dealing with, we have so many things, so many responsibilities. Look, you could just tell from the utilities meeting that we had all the flooding issues. And I mean, we have our infrastructure, so even though we've done a good job keeping up, some of it's over 100 years old. And that, so we have a responsibility to make our living conditions in this town. And that's why I blame our country. Our infrastructure in the country has gone to pot. And we need to, in order to keep the economy going, that we need to make sure our roads, our sewers, our... everything possible is in tip-top shape, and that requires a lot of money. And the city has that responsibility. The schools, I know I was on the school board. I mean, there's so many unfunded mandates that drive me crazy. If the state would say you got to do this, do that, but they give a city or a school like an event, they don't give many source of revenue to pay for that. But that's either here or there. Given the situation, it's very interesting what Ken brought up. But I think at this moment, I'd be awfully hesitant to support this, even though I think he's done a great job of studying this. I commend Ken for that. I don't know how other council members feel, Committee members, Dale, how do you feel in that regard?
I definitely think that if the times were better, it'd be much easier to push. And I think it's a worthwhile idea. Part of what I'm hearing, I think, is, and you want to try to connect this with Jim's idea of trying to use the tax burden currently for residents?
Is $150 going to really make residents ease their pain? I don't know. If that's the dollar amount that we're looking at, the average house homeowner.
Well, Tim, what was your total amount that you suggested?
I think it was $250,000.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ken.
And with, what are we talking about? 3,000 residences times $150? How's that math shake out?
It's $450,000. That's because half of it's going to go to the business community.
Right.
Where I am. I think as far as Jim's proposal goes, I think in discussion this earlier, previously with the mayor and with the finance director, we still don't know what the federal and state programs will allow us. Would we get some funding source from them too? And I think hopefully we'll get some clarity if there's a third stimulus for that. I think it might be premature, but I like to have our basic, because we have enough responsibility to this community from an infrastructure standpoint, and from a, I mean, I just, I don't want to be loose and free with funding we have. I mean, but I, again, I acquiesce to the majority of council in that regard, but that's what my feeling is on that.
Okay, what about everybody else?
Yeah, what about everybody else?
I'm willing to have that discussion. The school board is going to be in the same boat we're in terms of revenue losses. So if you give, at least let's have something on the table that we can all look at the next meeting, and to pass this in June. And so we've got a little time to look at it. But, it's worth doing it. Let's consult with our colleagues about that. I think the residents look at independence as independence, not the Board of Education versus the city versus, you know, the sewer district or anything else. I think we have to look at it as a community. If there's a way we can help them, I mean, we know there's no new money coming out of Columbus from schools, that's for sure. And I just sent a note to everybody, we have a...
Jim, your mic cut out.
So, Ken, I think you have a great idea, and I know you did a lot of work on it. For one, I think it's bad timing on the city's part. Two, as an elected official, I have to put the city first. I have to agree with Dave and Kathleen is that my first interest is for the city. So I guess in these trying times, I have to protect the city first. And $800,000 may not seem like a lot of money when you have a $40 million budget. But to me, it's a lot of money. And to save $150 per family, to me, doesn't seem like a lot of money. So I think to give up $150 per family to put the city in an $800,000 loss of revenue a year forever, it's not just for 1 year, it's forever, I'd really have to look at that very closely before I would agree with that.
I think it's open for discussion, but we need more time than just 20 minutes to do it. You know, a meeting alone set aside for this is what should have to be done if we want to.
And that's why I was asking, Chris, if we have the majority of council feeling this is something we want to do at this time, I would certainly concur with it. If we don't have the majority, then I think it's going to be very involved discussion, and I think we have so much else on our plate right now that I would prefer to put it to a side if we don't have the majority.
Right, I agree.
And I think, like you said, a decision like this is long-term. If we go out to the plan that Ken gives, it'll be a one-year reprieve, it seems like, and then next year the schools could grab the extra money. Then it's pretty much, I don't think anybody, future council people, would ever want to tax our residents without a vote of the people, I think. So I think it would be, again, locked into that. But I hate down the road when things get tough, they're going to say, what were those councilmen thinking back in 2020 when they made this decision? And now they, because things are so fluid, like, I mean, it's, and especially with what's happened this year, I'd be hesitant this year if things got more back to normal next year from a economic standpoint, might be more receptive at that point. But for now, I just, I'm taking it just day by day, week by week, and I don't think that'd be prudent at this point. But I would love to have another meeting to discuss it, because it would be the more knowledge that Ken can share with us, I think the better decisions we could make, whether it be this year or next year. So if council would want to have a discussion of this at our workshop for that, I'd be definitely open for that. But because the more knowledge we get, we're making decisions that that we can feel really right with. But right at this moment, we'll just again continue. I mean, if I'll do what council said. If we want to have another finance meeting or have a part of our workshop on this, we'll definitely have this topic. But because Ken, you put a lot of time and effort into it, and we want to also share in the knowledge that you've gained over the time. And sometimes it takes a comfort level, because I myself, this is what, the 17th year on council, it's totally alien to what I've been my feelings have been all along. And I don't know if you're going to change that overnight, but I do see some of the points you bring up, and it takes a little more in depth to really get that turnover in my decision making anyways. But
Dave, can I make two points when you're done? It may be off path, but like for future, any of us running in the future, if for some reason it doesn't, and it has to go to a levy vote, I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to be the one that, decided on this, and now I got to go to the people and say, hey, we got to vote for this because it's already happening. And secondly, I mean, to have to vote on something like this in June, I don't think that a month is enough time to really sit down and get to the nitty gritty of this topic and have it to be voted on this year for, next year, budget.
You bring up a good point, Chris. I think that's something that we can stay the course for this year, but have these discussions, and Ken could lead them even in discussions to get us to that comfort level. Because to me, it will take a number of these sessions for me to get comfortable with that.
Absolutely.
To change what has been the course of action that the school or the city has lived by for so many years, to all of a sudden give that up. And I do like the fact that at least we're keeping the pensions whole for the fire and the police. But to me, I like I said,
if that's just a suggestion, it doesn't have to be 1.6 mils. It could be 1/10 of a mil. Anything between 1/10 of a mil and 2.2 mils is possible.
And you bring up a good point, and that's something we could discuss on a regular basis and get us to that comfort level and everything. Because you put you spent, I'm sure, hours and hours researching this and checking. So it's something that we need to really, at least I feel to chew on. Because this, I think for the last 17 years, when we voted on this tax budget, it almost was a foregone conclusion. We had that hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Vern, but I think we had, this has almost been routine to pass this in past years.
Yeah, my hope, Dave, would be to have an opportunity to educate council about the huge planning opportunity that is inherent in that inside village levy, what it could do for our community, when you think of community being schools plus city, what this could do for our community is just so amazing, at no tax increase to our residents.
Well, very good.
I think there's so much on our plate now, and as the administration's plate, you know, adding more to it currently is a lot. And I think, like I said before, we need more than the next 3 to 4 weeks of discussion to, you know, come to determine on whatever the millage would be. I think it should be put off for at least through the end of this year and talk about it and take the next 6 or 7 months to discuss it.
Well, I'm looking at my my clock here, and I guess we're getting near the 6:30 time, which the Planning Commission meeting will begin. So I think what we do, we had a thorough review. If there's any questions regarding the appropriations and that, Vern, you'd be open to handle any questions from the council or my committee regarding that. Definitely, we will save that. And again, I think this ongoing crisis we're going to discuss further when we have our meeting on the 19th regarding the effect of the coronavirus situation. But Ken, you brought up some good points, things that we're going to look at and study with you. We'll definitely schedule from time to time. I think at this point we'll need to probably put an end to our finance meeting. If there's anybody else has a final question from either the committee or from council?
Mayor, open the pools, open the civic center, open the field house as soon as possible.
Yeah. Why?
I think the appropriate word is as soon as possible.
Right. And Mayor, your hands are tied. You're going to wait for the state to give you direction, so you're not being an outlaw regarding those decisions, too. So
I would ask that we would have put that on the agenda for the council meetings. I think there's an important discussion to have about that, not just opening things up, but also talking about public health and safety and balancing those things as well. I have concerns.
Right. And if we, depending on how much time we have next week, but definitely on the 19th, and we might have to have a few more meetings from now and then just to keep up to date on these things, because things do change so rapidly. Jim, you bring up a good point.
Jim, if we don't do it during council, we can have a public lands and buildings meeting and discuss all that too, because it is, you know, quite free, you know, give us a little more time than trying to rush through it during council next week.
We also have an abbreviated caucus next week. Remember that. We're starting a half hour later. So if we really felt this was an issue we wanted to discuss, we could go back to the 5:30 start.
Correct. I'm open. I don't know who moved it to 6 o'clock anyways.
It was Debbie Gill.
The mayor did.
I was just teasing because I was bouncing back the time.
Well,
okay. Well, like you said, the buck stops here. We'll look at our agenda. We'll look at the schedule. And if we need to adjust it, as long as council's all available, then we can adjust it.
I think, Mayor, we'd be available if you push it to 5:30
perfect.
Or 5 or that.
Definitely.
Let's just say 5:30, and if we see where there's a more robust agenda, we can even push it back to 5.
Okay.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Mayor. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn from my committee.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, everyone, for your input and your attendance here today. I wish to thank Vern also and the mayor too for their input. This and we'll be meeting next week and again the following week. So we'll hopefully keep this regular, kind of getting the gist of these virtual meetings. So, but everyone have a good evening, and we will see you next week at this time at 5:30, and maybe we'll see if it pushed earlier. Thank you.
Thank you. Be safe,
everybody. Thanks, Vern. Take care.
Okay, let me get in first. Here. Do you want?
I have that. but
if you...
I don't have that agenda on my phone, and I watch the, I do these on my phone, and usually I just type in the meeting ID and then the password and pass it in. It didn't give you one for this meeting?
It did.
Oh,
it did. Let me...
All right, and if you got a call, don't worry about it. I could just check it up on the website or something.
If you go to the website, you can register right there as an attendee, or do you want...
Oh, yeah.
Let me look. Okay, we're getting there, guys. We have to stop the meetings at before.
Gentlemen.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
We just have to.
I'm just gonna click on that, I'm sure.
You guys, they'll be respectful.
We're not trying to do it online then if you gotta go.
All right, sorry, I've got like all these meeting things.
That's fine.
There we go. Perfect.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes. You?
Up by the X, the